Hey, everybody, and welcome to the NFL Roadshow. Lindsay Rhodes here, officially into week 13 now that the Steelers-Colts game from Monday is officially behind us. It was an emotional game for those of us here in the Rhodes household for reasons that I think many of you might relate to. So my son has had a rough first year of fantasy football in the luck department because his team is great. Like, literally, he has the most points scored in his entire league by 100-plus points. And he's in 10th place out of 12 teams. The team in first has had almost 200 points fewer scored against him. So it's been that kind of year for my Jackson. So Monday, my son goes into the night with a 15-point lead. Nobody left. His opponent has Pittman. And my whole family, because it's been such a rough year for my son, is literally only rooting against Pittman. We have no other investment in this game at all, just Pittman, which, you know, collegiate alliances out the window. You cannot succeed. My son must win this matchup. And at first, things are kind of going in that direction. Ryan didn't complete a pass until there were 7 minutes left in the second quarter. But then he starts connecting, and the lead starts shrinking. And when Indy gets the ball for their final drive, my son has a 1.5-point lead. And the first play of that drive is a 28-yard completion to Pittman. And there were tears. And I felt so bad because they were like trying not to cry frustration tears, which is the worst as a parent. He was just so bummed. And it's just what happens in fantasy. And in some ways, it's just what happens in sports, right? Like, you care. And sometimes the thing that should happen doesn't happen. And it just doesn't make any sense. And that is what it is like being a fan. But we keep coming back for more. And somehow love it in spite of the emotional roller coaster that it puts us on. Or maybe because of the emotional roller coaster. Maybe it's because of the lows that we really enjoy the highs. I don't know. I do know that there have been a lot of lows this year for Cardinals and Panthers fans. And they're going to get an emotional reprieve this week. Those two teams are on a bye. Primetime games in week 13 aren't great. Well, Thursday, I think, should be interesting, at least. Bills, Patriots, but Cowboys, Colts, Saints, Bucks, eh. That said, there are some interesting matchups in the 8-game early window, and there are some really good games in the afternoon. 4 games there, 3 of them are great. We've got Dolphins, Niners, McDaniel versus his former team. Can't wait for that one. Chiefs, Bengals, that'll be fun. And Chargers, Raiders, and who knows how that game will turn out, but their second meeting last year was my favorite game of the year. So I am excited about those matchups. I am not excited, but that's not the word I would use, but I am very intrigued by the Browns-Texans game. And I feel very conflicted about this, to be honest, because there's part of me that wants to just turn away. Because you guys know how I feel about Deshaun Watson and the Browns signing of him. We talked a lot about it in the offseason and have done full podcasts on this. And this will, of course, be his first game back. And frankly, I loved when I had JT O'Sullivan on a week ago and he was like, yeah, I'm not interested in doing that analysis when I asked him about how Deshaun Watson might change the Browns' offense. And he's in a position where he can do that, where he can say, I don't have to break down Deshaun Watson tape, so I'm not going to. And I respect it. And wish that that was the approach NFL teams took this past offseason instead of courting him feverishly. But since they did, and now he is on a team, I don't know quite what to do with that from a news standpoint. And the fact that Cleveland is 4-7 probably means that it won't be hard to avoid talking about them moving forward and being the gas for their hype train. But the news person in me is fascinated to see what happens on Sunday, how the crowd responds to him on the field, how his teammates seem to interact with him, what he looks like after all this time as a quarterback. Will he look like he's worth the things that Cleveland sacrificed to get him? Because they sacrificed a lot. So I will be keeping an eye on it. And my guest today will be doing even more than that. She will be on the sideline like she was last week for the Texans game against the Dolphins, when one of her sideline hits effectively went viral in a good way, meaning she got to something in her report that was so interesting and previously unrevealed that other newsmakers then reported on her report, went into the locker room after the game and followed up on it. It was about the doubts that crept into Tua's head last year when his coach, Brian Flores, did not seem to be a fan of his, and when many fans were very critical of his play. And specifically, it was about the way that Mike McDaniel turned that around for Tua. And it was very interesting and newsworthy, and I think very revealing about the two parties involved. But also, it was a sideline hit, which meant it was about 25 seconds long. So I reached out to the reporter, Aditi Kinkabwala, and asked her to come on this show so we could talk about it more. And as it turns out, there is so much more to the story. And I very much enjoyed the conversation that came of it about leadership and the vacuums that exist in that area and the ways that it is changing in the NFL. And obviously, we'll also talk about the Browns-Texans game. She's my good friend, Aditi Kinkabwala from the NFL on CBS. Let's go ahead and break the huddle.
Hurry up, let's go!
Two on two. Ready? Three.
Aditi Kinkabwala, I'm so excited to have you on the show. First of all, I want to know, because it's been so fun for me to every Sunday around, what, like 10:03, you know, up pops Aditi Kinkabwala on one of my screens doing a sideline report. Aww. All of the sideline reports in my like box of doing in
you studio. Get every single game simultaneously, Lindsay?
Well, I do the Fantasy Zone channel show for DirecTV. And so we have a screen that has all of the games up. And so, you know, at 10:03.
So do you mute everybody else when I come up? Is that how that works?
Well, everyone is muted, so I don't actually get to hear you. Oh. And the only time I get to hear you is if we go to that game live and they happen to go to you while we have the audio up.
Yeah. You know what's so disappointing? So like, if you're watching the Red Zone channel, you mm-hmm. always hear the announcers mm-hmm. when your game is in the red zone, but the sideline reporter is never on in the red zone because yeah, that's, it's the red yeah. zone.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So oh, well. you don't make that specific error.
But yeah, it's funny. My parents don't see me anymore, really.
What do you mean?
Well, because they're not in the market that I'm usually doing my game.
So my husband is watching games that way this year and I'm not here. So it doesn't totally matter, but I'm right. like, wait, you didn't order Sunday ticket. I shouldn't even admit this because they literally employ me. But, and he's like, well, no, like we have baseball games and stuff are coming and going. It just didn't seem like it. I'm like, so you just watch whatever they give you on Fox and CBS. Like this feels like 1985 to me. Like I could never.
But see, that's how I enjoy watching a game, Lindsay, and this is almost our perfect segue. I love the arc of the story of a game. I love mm-hmm. the story of two teams. And to me, when you're constantly flipping, and I can say this because I'm not employed by DirecTV, obviously.
We're going to edit this
out. You're missing some of that, right? Like even last night, in last night's game, in the Monday night game, Kenny Pickett, the Steelers rookie quarterback, had this tremendous drive hit, but so much of it was happened. So much of the story of it is the response to what happened in the previous two drives when they went three and out, right? Is that, I'm not even sure if that's completely accurate. Please forgive me. I was really exhausted.
No, you're totally right. You missed the patterns. You missed.
Right. Mm-hmm. And all of that is part of the story of a game. And to me, a game is a story, right? There's like a beginning, a middle, an end. There's sometimes this enormous suspense, sometimes not. And you just miss that when you're kind of looking for big play, big play, big play. And often yeah. you miss what could be a sneaky big play that doesn't necessarily grab everybody. You know, yeah. sometimes it's what happened on second down that sets up what happened on third down.
Oh, totally. One of the things that I like about doing Fantasy Zone channel, and it's definitely a skewed perspective. All of these are very specific ways to watch football. And when sure. I first started watching Red Zone, I was like, I feel like I have anxiety. Like it's moving too fast for me, but then you adjust. And on Fantasy Zone channel, because we're tracking fantasy production,
every big play makes it in. Like, we're not looking necessarily just for the scores. You're looking for anything that will contribute to somebody's fantasy production. And we're tracking the stats pretty heavily because you want to see like who's popping, who's getting used. Usage is so huge in fantasy. So where's the opportunity? Who's not getting used? Where is it falling flat? And so I feel like it does tend to just the experience of it for me. I feel like I leave the day with a relatively full picture, but you are losing, like, did the right guard go down and did that affect the way that they were running the ball? You know, like in your game, Jeff Wilson Jr. was going in and out. Well, Jeff Wilson Jr. was a huge fantasy play last week. It was like, Texans defense, fire him up. Oh, Mostert's not playing. He's going to get the ball all the time. So Jeff Wilson Jr. was a massive, like, everyone in fantasy was like, you got to play this guy.
Right. But did you know that Teron Armstead went down?
Right. See, that's my point.
And did you know that Austin Jackson, who was making his first start since suffering that high ankle sprain week one, also left the game, you know? So yeah, there's definitely pieces to that. And it's hard when you're, again, in and out, but I mean, there's part of the magic to that too.
So they kept you busy in that Dolphins Texans game.
Yeah. Yeah.
First of all, how are you enjoying doing sideline? Because this is kind of a new thing and it's a specific experience. I don't necessarily love sideline. Like, there are aspects of sideline that I like, but I just feel stressed out the whole time. Like, it's a very stressful experience for me, but I've never done an NFL sideline game. And so I was actually talking to somebody about this recently. Like, college, you're jumping into two teams that you don't cover, you know, regularly for the most part. And so you're cramming, you don't know the human beings. I feel like if I were to do sideline on an NFL game, it might feel different because I know all the storylines, you know, the basics, right? Because we cover the league and you know the people. And so I think it might be different, but just in general, it's like quick, 30 seconds, go, be perfect.
Sure. Yes. Okay. So I think that part of what you're saying, in my old life, obviously, or in my previous life for 10 years, I was at the NFL Network. In theory, I was a national correspondent, but the last 5 years, especially, I was really honed in on the AFC North. And so I knew those four teams inside out. And whereas every week there could be a new opponent, maybe like the Chargers or, you know, the Rams that you have to cram on, you know, at least one of the teams inside out and you're cramming on the other. This year in this role, I could see anybody for the first time. And it is learning. And to your point, it's like, you know, the big storylines, but I think that the sideline reporters that do the best job are the ones that are taking you deeper, are telling you something that you don't already know, that you didn't just read in your beat reporter story or listen to on a beat reporter's podcast or hear on the radio driving in. You want to take the viewer, because especially when you're doing a regional game, the games that I've done so far are the 1 p.m. games. And this is what you were talking about with your husband, with Matt, watching whatever is on in LA at 10 a.m. on CBS is what he gets. Those are the games I'm doing. I'm not doing the national Sunday night football or Monday night. So I'm going to two very specific fan bases. I'm going to two groups of people that know their teams inside out already. Yep. If I'm just regurgitating what they read in the Wednesday paper, I'm offering nothing. Yep. It is my job to take you deeper, to give you something that you haven't heard or focused on or paid attention to prior to that. And it is difficult when you don't know those teams. Like, just like in college, you're really learning new teams and you're trying to get deeper with new people. I think that when you've covered the league a long time, though, you have a great sense of what is a potential storyline and what are trends or what is something that I saw 10 years ago. You know, like when you hear the specificity with which Mike McDaniel teaches his receivers to run their routes and why the depth of where they run matches exactly the quarterback's drop back. And what he demands and how that creates open spaces and why the Dolphins now have greater yak than they did a year ago, that sort of triggers in my head, hey, I remember a dozen years ago having this conversation with the then Giants offensive coordinator, Kevin Gilbride, about how much he expected of his wide receivers in the run and shoot offense in Houston and how smart those guys were versus what he could necessarily do with conversion routes with the Giants. And again, it's like the connective tissue. So it like gives you a chance to ask a question that perhaps takes you somewhere. And maybe it takes you to the way that Mike McDaniel teaches, such that he has the ability to have his players see what he's seeing. Maybe it takes you somewhere with how smart that receiving core is, such that they're able to do some different things that maybe other receiving cores can't. Maybe, you know, again, And I don't know if I'm getting too much in the weeds on this, but
never.
The big picture story here is that, Lindsay, I'm loving it. Like, I am loving the sidelines so much more than I expected to. I think a piece of it is sort of being in the middle of the action. I love from the production meeting where you sit with the coaches and the players and you really sort of get at the nitty gritty and the truth, and it's unfiltered for what is mass media consumption or what is one blogger taking somewhere or a clickbait. It's just, you want to be as pure as possible in telling the story of a team in a game. And there's a level of trust in that. And even though I've covered the league as long as I have, more than a dozen years, I'm learning so, so much. And then to be on the sideline, to be behind the bench and to actually hear what a coach is saying to a player or what coaches are discussing. And some of that you're not allowed to say, obviously. Some of that is offering context or paraphrasing to paint that bigger picture. I'm learning so much from there. And frankly, I like being out of the business of sort of chasing transactional things. I like the bigger picture storytelling, which I think you really have an opportunity to do. I mean, at the end of the day, football is about the game, right? It's about the players that play the game. It's about the coaches that coach the game. It's about the people, and it's about the actual action. And I think we get to do that. So I'm loving that. And I would be remiss if I didn't say I am loving the people that I work with at CBS. It's just such an encouraging, supportive, wonderful environment, and which kind of brings me to Mike McDaniel and what he has created in Miami.
So, in that particular sideline hit that you had about the struggles that Tua had. And the specific quote, you know, where you talked about him kind of looking in the mirror and asking, like, do I suck? And like, Mike McDaniel, and by the way, I have to remind myself every single time I say it that it's McDaniel and not McDaniels, that it's Josh McDaniels with an S and Mike McDaniel. Anyway, I get that one, I get hung up on. But the fact that he approaches this team and approached the situation with Tua the way that he did, and you articulated it really well. I want to hear the whole backstory there. I think it is such a great story, and it contributed so much to the conversation surrounding the Dolphins. And like, I have had a hard time putting my finger on exactly why I like Mike McDaniel, but I've known every time he talks, I'm like, yes, like I there's something about him, and there are some things that are tangible, but there's something about him that I just really like. And I think that this was a specific example of like, there are some coaches out there, you just know, would not take the time to say, how do I pull the best out of this player? They'd be like, look, here's the play. Go do it. Do the thing. If you can't do the thing, I'll find somebody else who can do the thing. And I think that it's a really underrated, under-talked about skill that some coaches have to really like find a way to get that person to either believe in themselves or take that next step and what it is that they need to do to push that person to become the best that they can be. And I think that your story, which we've now talked around completely, was a really good example of that.
So several things here again, right? So one, I think we're seeing that a lot with this newer generation of coaches, that it's about coaching humans. It's not just coaching an X and an O, and a part of getting through to someone, you know, everyone is motivated in a different way. And whereas there was a time perhaps where you could essentially just scream at someone to do what you wanted them to do, and that was that. Maybe that's not the best way to motivate someone. Maybe, and I actually tweeted this and I'll get into it. Maybe lambasting someone constantly isn't the way to drive them to be their best. I think we are seeing with a Nick Sirianni, who every single Friday makes a point of having just at least 15 minutes with Jalen Hurts to talk and not talk about their play script, not talk about their red zone plays, but just talk. Talk about how they're both sons of coaches. Talk about being younger brothers. Talk about moments in time. There's a connection. You see that with a Nick Sirianni. You see that with a Mike McDaniel. And Mike McDaniel specifically is unabashedly different than the vast majority of NFL coaches. And he makes no apologies for that. He is not trying to be somebody that he's not. He is not trying to fit any mold. He very openly told us that he was called Broom Closet Boy for years in his career because he worked in some sort of little broom closet and people knew that he contributed somehow to the 49ers or to whoever, but they never actually knew what the contribution was. And for him, he wasn't going to change to get that attention, to say, look at me, here's my contribution. He had a desire to be authentic to who he was. And you see it working. And I love this. I love his commitment to being himself. It's like that line, Lindsay, right? It's be yourself, everyone else is taken. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I also love that he's showing the world, you don't have to do it the same way that it's always been done. And the great part of all of this is he's like, I'm not reinventing the wheel here. This is common sense. And in my mind, it is. It's leadership 101. Yeah. And so I'll get to that. Let's start with this. Mike McDaniel, very openly, you know, when I'm asking him questions about this Saturday, says that the reason that he got into coaching is that he felt he never had the sort of coaching that would make a difference. He never felt that he had someone who fully believed in him and believed in his abilities. And so instead of sitting here and saying, well, this is a crap profession. Now, these are my words, but instead of him saying like, whatever, he was like, you know what? My life would have been so different if I had somebody believe in me. So I'm going to be that person who goes and believes in someone. Now let's fast forward. Here he has this opportunity in Miami. He's heard all of these things about Tua that all of us heard over the last year. I mean, the Miami Dolphins made no secret of the fact that they were yanking him in and out, that they were throwing Ryan Fitzpatrick in there, that they wanted Deshaun Watson, that the former coaching staff wasn't necessarily sold on Tua. Tua himself said that, you know, it was the white elephant in the room, that there were all this constant patter. Is he a bust? And so I actually asked Tua, and this goes back. I won't get into like the weeds of why I wanted to chase this storyline. But on Saturday, I said to Tua, I said, did you ever actually, you know, find yourself last year questioning yourself? Did you ever doubt yourself? And he said, yeah. I mean, he was as honest as could be. And he said, he looked himself in the mirror and said, do I suck? And he had conversations with himself. He said, I had whole conversations about whether I could actually do this or not. And when I said, when, he said, oh, it happened multiple times during the year that he's doubting himself. And so Mike McDaniel, before he hears all this noise, but before he makes any judgment, he wants to watch the film himself. And he does this everywhere. And he actually told us that he did this more with the defense than he did with the offense, because historically he's been able to, in his words, sort of uplift quarterbacks, that they have figured out a way. Mike McDaniel, Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan, the whole tree, Gary Kubiak, who he's been with, they've been able to figure out ways to make quarterbacks play better. So he wasn't so worried about the offense. It was more the defense that he actually spent time with. Then he got around to looking at this offensive line that obviously was much maligned. And he got around to looking at Tua. And he's looking at Tua. He's seeing all these nuanced things that he just can't believe weren't taken advantage of. And I'll give you an example of one. Mike McDaniel told us that he thinks that Tua is better at visually moving defenders than perhaps anybody he's ever been around. that was something that Tua was legitimately discouraged from doing a year ago, the previous coaches that were with him. So Mike McDaniel sees this on film. Exactly. So Mike thinks that this is a gift. That's what he called it. He said, this is a gift, the way that he's able to do this. But a year ago, Tua was working with a staff that didn't necessarily see that as a gift or view that as an asset. And think about this, Lindsay. We've all been in positions in our lives where we've done something that we thought this is what makes us special, but depending on who we were working with, it was maybe valued or not. So anyway, so Mike McDaniel looks at Tua. He sees his upbringing. And I feel comfortable saying this because quite frankly, I think, and I've talked about this with Tua, I think Tua and I grew up in very similar families. You know, he is of Samoan descent. I am of Indian descent. We have very, very strong parents who are strict disciplinarians. Almost everything that we do in our lives is to gain the approval of not only our parents, but authority figures. And, you know, you've got a guy who just wants, you've got a young quarterback who just wants to please his coaches, right? But they're not necessarily picking up on what he does so great. And, you know, I'll say this too, like I go in the tank when I think I'm disappointing my mom or my dad or my boss or whoever.
Yeah.
I get in myself like this. So clearly this is what's happening.
I'm the same way.
You know,
like you need like, some sort of, you know, you shouldn't need the external validation, but you do that, like lifts you up and makes you feel empowered and like, okay, I'm on the right track. Let's continue to do this. I'm motivated to like,
I mean, I've said this to bosses myself that,
yeah,
if you make me feel, for me, there is nothing that drives me more than feeling that I am extraordinary. Because if you think that I'm special or if you think that I'm great, it drives me that much more to prove tomorrow that I am as great as you say and even greater than you say. Yep. If you tell me I suck, then I'm like, oh no. What am I doing wrong? What can I do better? Well, why do I suck? And why this? And how do I, and should I be more like that person?
And then you just don't know. You don't know how to go about doing the job because the way that you naturally, instinctually feel like you should do it, you second guess.
Exactly. So anyway, so Mike McDaniel figures out all of this, right? Just like inherently reads, because this is one of his talents, that Mike McDaniel is phenomenal at putting himself in other people's shoes. And number one, just trying to put himself in someone else's shoes. So he tries to put himself into his shoes. He learns that, you know, there's all this, and let's not waste time talking about this, but there's all this toxicity around him in Miami. There's all these factors going into what's going on with him. There's the coming in and out of games. There's all this white noise. There's an offense that maybe doesn't necessarily suit him. There's a list of eligibles, wide receivers, tight ends that are getting no yak. They're not really helping him in any way. There's a line that's underperforming. Yeah. So there's all of that. So then Mike McDaniel decides, I'm going to just go through tape. And I think that I need to make sure that he sees, I'm not just giving you words. I'm not just saying, I think that you were not set up to succeed. I want to show you why I think you can be successful. And as he starts going through the tape, and I don't even know how many games he got through, he's at 700 plays that he thinks are so exceptional that he's like, gosh, this guy is even better than I thought he was. So then he shows this tape to Tua. And I think Tua said they only really actually got through 90 plays. Like Mike told him that there's 700,
but it's like, I've seen enough. I believe in myself. Yeah, yeah.
No. But I don't think he really did believe in himself until then. But then Mike is so smart. Mike McDaniel is so smart. He doesn't just want to show it to Tua. He needs Tua to see, I'm tying myself to you. These aren't just words. And this is important because a few weeks ago, we had a meeting with Tua. This is before the Detroit game. And we were asking him about that, you know, FaceTime and Mike saying he was so excited to work with him. And I said to Tua, like, did you buy it? Were you excited? And he goes, well, you know, and credit to Tua. He's been honest every single conversation I've had with him. He said, well, yeah, it sounded nice. But you know what? Part of me was like, I've heard all this stuff before. So Mike McDaniel is smart enough to recognize, I don't want this to just be words. And I'm dealing with a guy who has every reason to be skeptical.
Did he show the
team? Mike McDaniel starts showing it to people around the organization. He starts, you know, essentially proselytizing about how fabulous Tua is. So now Tua hears him saying it. And Tua told us a great story. I didn't get to tell this one in the game Sunday. One day he's driving Teron Armstead home. Teron Armstead is the new, you know, left tackle. And he says to him in the car, he's like, you know, why'd you leave New Orleans? Why'd you pick us? And Teron is giving some reasons why he came to Miami. And he says to Tua, he says, you know, but the one thing I want you to know, this guy, Mike McDaniel, he loves you. Like, he has not stopped talking to me about what he thinks you can do. And for all of us, like, Lindsay, when you tell me such and such said something nice about you, it really means something. And it meant something to Tua, so much so that he's sharing it with us. And so I asked Tua, when did you really start believing it? You know, like, Mike is telling you, I think that you can be an MVP type quarterback. I think you are one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He can tell you that. When did you start saying, okay, yeah, yeah. And Tua didn't have an answer. So I asked Mike, I said, you know, when do you think Tua started really feeling it? And Mike knew exactly when. He said, there's this day in OTAs. He couldn't tell you what day it was. He said, but there was this day in OTAs, and forgive me because I'm going to go through my notes. And he said, you know, the defense was basically playing cover zero, and Tua hit a 70-yard touchdown on the outside. It was, you know, like a 3-by-1 defense, whatever. Tua happened to see the corner hesitate. He hits a 70-yard pass, and Mike said, every single one of his teammates just jaw dropped right there. And the way that Mike put it to us, like, it wasn't going to be enough for just Mike McDaniel to see and say Tua could be all of this. The team needed to see that he was going to be all of this. And he believes it was that OTA where the team saw that, their jaws dropped, Tua saw their jaws dropped. And that was so uplifting, encouraging, motivating, driving. And again, Lindsay, it's leadership 101. Like, you need your guys to believe in you. It's, didn't Deion Sanders say this? Look good, feel good, feel good, play good. And here's that one point, and I did make this in the game, that ties it all back to the football. Mike McDaniel said openly, look, a quarterback in any given game has to make a split second decision. And so many times that split second decision is just based on confidence. All right, I'm confident. I'm just like, this is the way we got to go. You cannot have any hesitancy. You cannot be timid when it's time to make that decision. So if you're a quarterback that's constantly beaten up, if you're a quarterback that's constantly lambasted, how are you ever going to have confidence on the field to go make that throw or make that check or make that adjustment or make that alert or make that play?
That's the part that confuses me about why more coaches don't go out of their way to try to do stuff like this. Because even if you are not naturally an empathetic person, which I think we've established that McDaniel is, this is clearly, like, if you're tied to someone and your success is reliant on them hitting their ceiling or coming close to what they're capable of doing, selfishly, it's in your best interest to a way to bring that out. And it's so confusing to me, the number of times that we see coaches that, I mean, it's not that they don't go out of their way to motivate or do anything like that. I think a lot of this gets lost in ways where some people kind of hear stories like this. And you told that so well and in such detail that I think it's hard to roll your eyes at if somebody was naturally inclined to do that. But you hear, you know, phrases, and like, you might hear the 30-second story on the sideline, just roll your eyes and be like, he's a grown man and he shouldn't need motivation, and he's getting paid millions of dollars and all this stuff. Like, it's not even just about that. Like, it's about selfishly, like, do you want to, like, find ways to win? Like, what is the thing that you need to do?
But the piece to this is not just football. This, to me, Lindsay, is leadership 101. I mean, I'll tell you, I've got a friend who's a basketball coach, a college basketball coach, and he messaged me. He's like, oh my gosh, what a hit. Like, I love this guy now. And so I'm like, oh, yes, and said a little something back. And then he messages me a few hours later and he said, oh my gosh, I'm down the rabbit hole now. This is my new favorite coach. I'm like, what do you mean? Or he's like, you put me down the rabbit hole. He said he listened to 2 podcasts with Mike McDaniel simply because of that. And now Mike McDaniel is a guy that he wants to go and meet with in the offseason, just as a fellow coach and as a basketball coach, because he thinks that there's something to be gleaned. And I think that that's I think that that's where we are as a society at large. And I would say this about any sort of leadership, any sort of parenting, really. You know, like I've learned this with my 7-year-old son. Instead of sitting here and saying to him, well, how many kids scored better than you? You're so stupid. You know, like that's just not going to get anywhere with Nico. I need to say to him, hey, buddy, you're so smart. I know that you can do better than this. And this is why I know you can do better than this. And gosh, you did those math problems so quickly. You are capable of this. And that's what drives him. And it's not being soft. It's not participation trophies. I mean, anybody who's in my house knows I'm a tiger mom. It's just figuring out that, you know, screaming at somebody all the time isn't necessarily the only way to get through to them. And not everybody is motivated by fear. And so I love the lessons. I want to scream it from the rooftops that like, there is a way to lead. And it's not only the way that Bill Belichick leads. And that has been a tremendously successful way to lead. And that is not taking anything away from Bill Belichick or the way that Bill Belichick got whatever it is that he got out of Tom Brady. But that may not be the same relationship that works everywhere. We're not all one size fits all. And Mike Vrabel, he's got that team playing that way simply by virtue of how much they love him and believe in him and want to not disappoint him. And Nick Sirianni, who I also mentioned, you know, like we can keep going. I just think that we should talk more about the success that Mike McDaniel is having, if only to perhaps give other untraditional, unconventional candidates a look-see. And yeah, and I don't say that only about race or ethnicity or background or age. Part of it is about method and means and personality.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he looks like the student manager, but like, hey, let's check him out.
Yeah. Can I tell you, that's a little frustrating. I am going to tell him this, that, so one of the things that's a little, I hate when, I mean, it's funny at this point, but like people talk about how short I am and it's like, whatever, why does that make me a bad journalist? Because I'm short. But when you are standing on a bench or behind a bench or on a sideline and you are trying to find people, sometimes you're like, oh, on your tippy, tippy, tippy toes, trying to like look over all these people. Mike McDaniel is very hard to find on the sideline.
Is he? He's just like, yep.
He's like so unassuming. He's so like, you know, because most head coaches, it's like, all right, I see you. And even like Kevin Stefanski is a very slight person, but I know where he generally is. So I can, you know, and I always try to on the sideline, stand at the line of scrimmage and keep an eye on what's happening with the coaching staff. And especially if you're like in a fourth down situation, I want to like eyeball the coach. What are they going to do here before we see a change of, you know, players or not? And it's hard to find Mike because Mike doesn't like stand right on the edge, kind of like paces. And then he's not purposely hiding, but he's little like I am. So he kind of gets hidden.
When you go into a game, how prepared are you with like specific stories? Are they kind of mapped out? Like here, they're probably going to come to me X number of times and here are my priority stories. And then how much are you prioritizing like whatever happens live? How much is that kind of what you think your job is? Like, I mean, and as we established on the Dolphins sideline alone last week, a lot did happen, you know, with Tua coming out because Armstead came out. Or at least I assume it was because Armstead came out. Jeff Wilson going back and forth.
Actually,
well, I thought Armstead came out and then he was getting hit. And then maybe were thinking like, this might not be a good idea. And we have a big lead. So let's go ahead and put Skylar in.
Well, and that was actually a question that I asked Mike McDaniel coming out at halftime because the Dolphins were up 30-0. So I was like, do you even put Tua back in here? And his response, which, God bless him, he's wonderful too, was like, well, quite frankly, Tua right now thinks that there's still some things to clean up. Remember, they were coming off of a bye. They'd had 6 days off. And he was like, Tua just wants to sort some of that out. There's a little bit of the rust we still want to work out. And he's like, but hopefully we keep going. And then he does come out. And he also said, you know what, this is a prime opportunity. He told his team, this is a prime opportunity to show that we don't let up, that we don't take our foot off our gas. And this is about not just getting a win, but we are still in the process of building our brand of who we are as the Dolphins. And part of that is not letting up. Now, of course, the Texans did indeed get back in that game. So in that sense, there's a great learning lesson. You know, you still got the W, but there's still something to teach off of. How much do I prepare? So at the start of the season, way more.
Yeah.
Way more. Now, I think, obviously, you know, I go in with a bunch of stories I would like to tell. I try to have those stories not necessarily be things that everybody's already heard or seen. Sometimes they're so big that you have to share them anyway, you know, or you try to get a new nugget to take the story a little further.
How can I move it forward?
Yeah. Right. But to me, for me as a viewer and as a person who loves football, I like watching something that feels fresh and new. So I think the best reports I offer, I get to be someplace where nobody else gets to be, including my guys in the booth. Whoever is up in the booth, my play-by-play, my analyst, they're not on the field. They don't necessarily see Joe Flacco week two encouraging his teammates, come on, guys, stay in this. We still have at least one or two more possessions. This isn't out of reach. They don't see that. They don't see Baker Mayfield apologizing to Christian McCaffrey. They don't see somebody testing a leg out. So you want, they don't see a head coach and a quarterback huddling to sort of discuss what should we do here. I get to see that. I get to be in a place where a camera may not catch something, where a viewer doesn't see something. So I think the best reports are the ones that are fresh. Here, I'm adding something on the field, you know, for instance, let's say again, like Christian Wilkins, who is a defensive player for the Dolphins, racing all the way across the field to celebrate with the offense. And these guys are genuinely having fun. And that ties into Tua saying, this is the most fun he's ever seen this team had since he's been a Dolphin. So what I'm saying there is I come in with as much preparation as I can, with as much interviewing, with as many story ideas. But I think the reports that I feel most strongly about are the ones that tie what's happening on the field to something that I think gives it more context. So I don't want to come in with an already prepared 20-second report, right? I want to give you something that's fresh, but I want to add to it with what my preparation was. If, you know, like I asked Tua about, I read in a story that Tua had invited Daryl Bevel, his quarterback's coach, over for dinner to his house, and it had invited his family over. So I just kind of wanted to know a little bit more about that. Tua, have you ever done that before? He hadn't done that before. So Daryl Bevel, his wife, his two adult daughters and their spouses all came over and they ate dinner together and they watched the new Top Gun. And why? So if you've never invited a coach over before and you wanted his whole family to come over,
right.
Why?
What made it now?
And he starts talking about just how much he admires Daryl Bevel and the father that he is. And Tua is a new father. His son is 2.5 years old. And he thinks about the father that Bevel is to his daughters. And he says, you know, Daryl Bevel doesn't drink and he's never had caffeine and he doesn't curse. And this isn't how he, you know, this is how he tries to get through people. And this is how he teaches. And I just admire that so much. I wanted to know him and his family more. And I wanted him to know me and my family. And if there had been a moment where Daryl Bevel and Tua are deep in conversation or laughing or engaging in some way, and our camera catches that, then I could say, hey, watch the way that Tua and his quarterback's coach are engaging right now. Maybe Tua has a play that doesn't go well and he comes off and the guy that's sitting next to him with the iPad going over, okay, so this is what didn't go right. Then maybe I say he's sitting with Daryl Bevel, who's teaching him or who's talking to him or who's talking through that play with him. And this is how the two of them have been fostering their relationship. You know, so it's kind of, you want to come in prepared, but you really want to count on your eyes and your ears and knowing it's trying to pick out what will be the stories that are relevant. And, you know, to your point about what's being tough about a sideline reporter, you've got so much you want to say that you just can't get in. I mean, yeah. I said this to you, Lindsay, I appreciate your letting me tell the whole story mm-hmm. of this Mike McDaniel to a relationship and why Mike McDaniel, in his own words, attacked this confidence crisis, this crisis of confidence every single day on the job, why it was so vital to him. It's a much longer story than 20 seconds. And in a game, you don't have more than 20 seconds to tell that story. So,
Aditi, you're making me want to get on a sideline. Like you're selling the job to me. Like my juices are, I'm like amped now.
Yeah. I just hope I get to keep doing it, you know?
Well, come on.
But it's fun. It's fun to get to do new things.
I'm curious about this, and I'm sure that the answer kind of varies. And the sideline thing is new, but you've obviously been around teams before. You've hit on a lot of like intangible things that are relationship driven, things that like are kind of behind the scenes, things that happen off the field that result in people clicking and sometimes, not always, leads to success on the field. I would suggest in the Dolphins case it has. How frequently do you get a sense like there are intangibles here and this is going to go somewhere, you know, like where it feels like we're onto something versus I can tell on this sideline that this isn't going anywhere this year. Like even if they have the pieces, it's just not.
Okay. So this is what we were talking about earlier, right? Like you think you have an ability and you want, like, we all have different strengths and weaknesses. And Lindsay, since you are a dear, dear friend of mine, you know many, many, many of my weaknesses, which we won't enumerate right now.
Can't think of one.
But yeah, please, which is, I'll pay you after this one, clearly. One of the things that I like to feel separates me, or one of the things that I feel good about, is my intuition, or what I think are my people skills. And reading chemistry is one of those things that I happen to think that I'm fairly in tune to, maybe because it's something that matters to me. And a dozen years ago, the New York Giants were playing horribly. They were in the midst of a four-game losing streak. And true story, you can call my old editor at the Wall Street Journal, Sam Walker. I said to Sam Walker, you know, I think this team could really, if they can get in the playoffs, this is a team that can make a run. And I think this team has what it needs to really, truly get to the Super Bowl. And this is why. And Sam said that I was drinking blue Kool-Aid. He suggested that I needed my head checked. He probably asked if, you know, I was doing drugs at the time. And guess what? The Giants won a much needed game around, I can't remember if it was Christmas Eve or Christmas Day or the day after Christmas, against the Jets. Then they won an absolutely necessary game Sunday night, last week of the season, against the Cowboys. They get into the playoffs. They march all the way to Indianapolis and the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots, and they win the Super Bowl. And Sam Walker had to write a letter to all of our bosses at the Wall Street Journal asking for a bonus for me. And in that letter, he made a point of saying she read this. She said there was something about this team when we all thought that she was nuts. So I do think that sometimes you can, I mean, you can't always, right? Like, no one knows, but there is something to be said for playing for each other. I have yet to be around a team that hated each other and still had a lot of success. I think that there's something for playing for the guy next to you, as opposed to just playing for your paycheck or playing for not being yelled at by your coach. I think when there's a genuine affinity for the people that you work with, it counts for something. And again, let's just go back to common sense. If you enjoy what you do, if you enjoy being in the building, you're going to be in the building. If you enjoy sitting in your quarterback room and watching film with your fellow quarterbacks, you're going to watch that film. When you love what you do, then isn't it common sense that you'll just be better at it?
Yeah.
When you love the people you work with, isn't it just common sense you'll want to spend more time with the people that you work with? Like, this isn't rocket science. And so I think that you can genuinely tell when people like each other, when they don't. Think about every show you've been on. Yeah. You know when the crew gets along and when it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, and there's, I think that that's something too, as a reporter, like in your example with the Giants, it's hard to describe in a way that feels like it isn't you drinking the blue Kool-Aid. You know what I mean? Right. And I've been in that situation a bunch too, where when you're around, it's the contrasts. You're around this and then you're around this. And you're like, this, I can't explain to you enough how different it is here than it is here. And they're over here. They don't know that it's that different in a different place because this is what they're experiencing. I use this example a lot. Like way back in the day when USC was really good, you know, at football before, and now they're good again. Fight on. But during the Pete Carroll days,
stole a Pitt receiver.
It happens. Those are the rules now. You know what I mean? Like, whatever.
Do you know who makes more money? Jordan Addison, the Biletnikoff winner, small aside. Do you know he makes more money in his NIL deal at USC than George Pickens, the Steelers' second round pick receiver, does?
Stop it.
Yeah, that's another pot. You'll have to have me on back.
That's insane.
Yeah. All right, keep going. So back in the day, USC.
But back in the day, I would go, you know, I'd be at USC's practices and around that team. And then I'd go over to UCLA. And just the contrast, I mean, there was a contrast in talent clearly at the time because USC had like quite a program going. But I was like, you can literally just go to the practice.
Yes.
And I could tell you that this is not, it's not, I mean, you could win. Maybe it'll be fluky though, because you're just not there. You're like, so in such a different place.
That's what's the magic of getting to go to different places, right? Yeah. I mean, I remember feeling it that the Steelers and Ravens practiced so differently than the Browns did. You know, there was a period of time of that. I remember when the Eagles and Vince Young was telling me how phenomenal they were and they were a dream team. And then I go down to the Falcons and I see Asante Samuel talking trash. I'm like, oh, that's what real moxie looks like. That's what real confidence is. I mean, but sometimes it's hard to ever put words to it. I asked Nick Caserio this on the field. Like, you look at Davis Mills. He's a second year quarterback. The guy only had 400 pass attempts at Stanford. You know, like, he barely played in college. He's playing behind such a, I don't even know what to call them, but a line that I don't know what quarterback could have success behind this line. There's really, like, that is a team that is bereft of talent right now.
Yeah.
How can you accurately judge Davis Mills? And look at Tua, look at Jalen Hurts, look at Geno Smith. You know, sometimes with young quarterbacks, you need patience and you need development. So how do you know that Davis isn't it? Or how do you know that maybe just the environment around him, the puzzle pieces aren't great? And Nick Caserio was like, sometimes you just know when you know, like, which sounds crazy, but it's almost like the Supreme Court justice who said about pornography, you know, like, there's not necessarily an easy formula of saying, yes, this guy is the answer, or no, this guy is never going to make it. Sometimes it's just your gut.
Yeah. Speaking of the Texans, you're on that sideline this week.
I am.
Since we're talking about psychology, that's a study in contrasts. What are you most interested to see in that game?
In the Browns Texans game?
Yeah.
That none of us get fired. You know what? This one's really hard. And we had the crew that I'm on for the game, we had an hour long Zoom this morning to try to talk through a lot of this, and we'll have another, and we obviously solved nothing. We will have another meeting with our bosses this week. I'm sure there'll be a ton of conversations because, you know, football fans want football, but nothing happens in a vacuum. And how can you possibly ignore everything that has happened in the last 2 years, beginning with Deshaun Watson wanting out of Houston and out of the Texans organization, to all of the accusations levied against him, to everything that has happened since. And, you know, this isn't a easy and clean, this isn't Mike Vick being in a court of law, being convicted of something, serving time, and there essentially being a neat, clean box around it. So this is just very dicey. And, you know, there's also the environment that the game will be played in. Look, we're in Miami. The crowd is chanting MVP. It's a part of our broadcast that the crowd is chanting MVP again. We'll be in Houston, and I am sure that there will be very, very nasty chanting, and there may be signage. And Tony Busby, the attorney who represented many of the women who accused Deshaun Watson of wrongdoing, has just said that he's going to be in a suite with at least 10 of Deshaun Watson's accusers. This is all part of the environment.
Does the broadcast show that?
I don't know. I don't know. As a football fan, do you care? Do you want to know that? As a woman, yeah. As a human being, as As someone who expects to know the truth. And, you know, this is all part.
Well, it's just, it's the context surrounding the game. Like if you are, this almost becomes like spot news, you know, which is a different experience than doing sideline on a normal game. Like now it's almost like newsy.
Yes. How about year one for Aditi right there, right?
Goodness, girl. I mean, I don't envy you having to navigate this one because it's super tricky for obvious reasons. And as part of the broadcast, you're not reporting on everything in the same way. And I think that that's something that everybody understands. Like there is a partnership when you're a part of the broadcast that is different than if you are there for the Houston Chronicle or, you know, the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
Well, and Lindsay, I lived that in the preseason, right? Because the Browns had, as you know, many, many teams hire journalists from other organizations. My colleague, Evan Washburn, does the Ravens preseason sideline. My colleague, Amanda Balionis, does a pregame show for the Steelers preseason. Our old colleague and friend, Cynthia Freeland, does the Buffalo Bills preseason sideline. So the Browns hired me to be their preseason sideline reporter. I worked with the fabulous Chris Rose and Joe Thomas. And when Deshaun Watson was about to make his one and only preseason start, there was a heavily negotiated interview opportunity. You know, I, wearing my CBS hat, had asked for the interview with Deshaun Watson, just like everybody else from the Pivot podcast to Real Sports had asked. That obviously wasn't happening. By the same token, I'm the sideline reporter. I talk to the player when he comes off the field. I'm not going to not ask about anything. And anyway, we don't need to rehash all of that. But I've already kind of lived that where there were some people who got the parameters that I was working under. And there were others that didn't. And what do you do, right? Like, you'd rather have the opportunity to ask the questions, tell the story, than have it go to somebody else. We all want that big moment. It's the same way that Michael Jordan wants the ball in his hands at the end of a game. It's the same way, you know, Patrick Mahomes wants to have the ball in the final 10 seconds. Like, we all want that, but part of it is trying to figure it out. And some of it you figure out on the fly, which is to Mike McDaniel's point, you need to make a snap decision and hopefully you have some confidence.
Well, one thing that I think I would be very interested in hearing from a sideline reporter like yourself in that game is Jacoby. Like,
oh yeah,
how he behaves on the sideline, I think is inherently interesting and obviously different from the controversy, but tied to it because I mean, I think a lot of people were rooting for Jacoby last week, and the way that that game ended was kind of fun to watch for him. And now to watch him go from the leadership role that he's had into a, like, now I'm supporting someone different to do the job that I just had last week. I mean, I can't even imagine the mixed emotions that he must have. And so how he handles that on the sideline, like you said, there will be backstories that I'm sure that you get this week, and then find the moment to tie it in when he's communicating with Deshaun Watson or offering suggestions or whatever.
And you are spot on. I've already made clear that I want to talk to Jacoby this week on the phone, that I'm going to get him on the phone. And Jacoby is a tremendous part of the story of this team. Mary Kay Cabot at the Cleveland Plain Dealer just wrote a story where four separate players, unprompted, unsolicited, said that Jacoby was their favorite quarterback that they ever played with. He is a tremendous teammate. He's a tremendous leader. He's a tremendous guy. And part of being with the Browns in the preseason was watching the way that Jacoby and Deshaun co-led and managed things together. I told this as a story earlier. I remember explicitly a game early where Anthony Schwartz had sort of quit on a route, and he came over to Jacoby to apologize. And Jacoby was sort of dealing with whatever was going on with the next play. And it was Deshaun who pulled him aside and talked to him and encouraged him and kind of showed him a little bit, this is how you actually want to handle a pick, and this is what you want to do. They've been very, very good at not stepping on each other, at not letting ego get in the way. And when I say they, Deshaun and Jacoby. And so certainly it will be part of the story. And I think that Jacoby deserves his due as well for handling a situation that, I mean, he came in, he knew he was going to be a backup. He didn't know how long. Then he knew he was going to start some. He knew as the team was struggling, even though it had nothing to do with him, because he really did play quite well. Everybody was sort of waiting for the other guy. I mean, you're right. There's a lot to tell. There's a lot to tell. Lindsay, we could do this like for weeks and hours at a time.
I was just looking at the clock. Like I when I texted you on Sunday, I was like, do you have 15 minutes?
Oh, well, good thing that we picked this time, right? In any case, we'll have to do this.
Let's do it again. We'll reconvene. Yeah.
That would be time. Awesome. Yeah, this maybe is... I'll put on fake eyelashes the next time we do it. And maybe like not be straight out of the shower and, you know, the whole thing. It's just been kind of a frantic day.
Oh, the best. I appreciate you.
I thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
My girl doing big things, and you'll be able to see her doing her thing on Sunday in Houston if you are a Sunday Ticket subscriber or you live in an area that gets the game. It's in the 1 p.m. Eastern window. I just checked. My husband will apparently have access to Jets and Vikings at that time. I think it's so funny. Anyway, you can find Aditi on Twitter at @akinkabwala, and you can also hear her on her new podcast that she does in conjunction with the Hall of Fame. It's called Football Heaven, and it features interviews with Hall of Famers like Jim Kelly, Warren Moon, and Kurt Warner, who are on the most recent episode, out right now wherever you get your podcasts. As for this podcast, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I certainly did. I could talk to Aditi all day long. I wish I had the chance to do it more often, in fact. Always love to hear your feedback. I'm at Lindsay_Rhodes on Twitter. Hit me up. LindsayRhodesNFL is my Instagram handle. Friendly push to subscribe, like, or review the podcast if you have not already done so. And remember, I'll be back on Friday with my fantasy thoughts on the week ahead, the Fantasy 15-ish. Thanks to Andrew Emmer, our producer. The NFL Roadshow is a part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network.
SiriusXM Podcasts.